Welcome to You, Me, and the Dogs, the podcast where we explore the wonderful world of dog ownership. Join me every Wednesday as my guests and I share personal stories, insights, and experiences, of course, with dogs.
Your love for pets and your animals, you said it yourself. I know how to do all this. I don't need to pay this X person. You know what to do.
Yeah, and like you said, as soon as you find your formula and literally like leverage these tools you have, like
build the bubble.
Right. Yeah, right. Like honestly, ChatGPT has been amazing.
I love that thing.
It's such a great
ChatGPT
tool.
ChatGPT is amazing. Like there's days where I send like 50 emails a day. And like there was like before we used ChatGPT, it was like, "Oh my god, the 51st email, what the frick am I gonna say now?"
Right.
You know? So, or even just brainstorming. And right. I never use a whole ChatGPT prompt. I don't think I ever have.
No, neither.
But it just gives you ideas and like you can change certain things.
Or also like, making sure what you're saying is what you're trying to convey.
Exactly. Or just kind of expand on
your
something.
Quality assurance
or we kind of
yourself.
Reword something.
You're not improving, you're quality assuring yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the new norm. I have met, and that's what I love. So our company started in, our DNA started in entertainment and arcades. Mm-hmm. We were building arcades and entertainment centers before we focus on the new, which is, you know, enterprise and procurement and AI and all that and VR. The realities are that when you're in entertainment, you get the benefit of interacting with the new mindset. And I have met kids that deeply inspire me. I known an engineer now an engineer. I remember having a conversation with him. He's I think 19, 20 years old, and I'm 33. And I remember this was like a year ago, and he's telling me, "Oh yeah, my first computer mm-hmm. was a Quest 1, a virtual reality headset." And I'm like, and now
when he said that, I was just like, wow, I am ancient.
And so, but yeah, that's the fun, the immediate, but
there are
levels of
so cool.
Cognitive, there's cognitive manipulations that are associated with that, right? There are, this is something I deeply tackle in my company. There is no understanding in the new digital world of what an engineer is.
Uh-huh.
You're an architect, right? Would you consider me telling ChatGPT, "I want to build a house"?
No, yeah.
And then ChatGPT draws me the sky, and then I follow directions. Do you consider me an architect? Honestly? No,
not
be
really.
Honest. You put in the
not
work.
Not really.
No.
No, not really.
I'm not.
But, I mean,
it gets
complicated, right?
It gets the job done.
Right, because, like, you know, technically Sears back in the day sold
manufactured homes.
Yeah. House kits. And I could tell you, I've seen some of those houses. You're like, holy fuck. Like, they have craftsmanship that you can't find now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How could I validate someone paying me X amount of money for this modern house that they want me to design when it doesn't have this craftsmanship?
There you go.
But it depends on who you're talking to, right? Because some people could value
your bubble. It's your bubble.
No, and the
it's
value.
It's so cool. It
yeah.
always comes back to that.
Yeah.
But
like what I'm realizing is like as I talk to you that it's like I answer the own question I had.
The scary part is asking it out loud.
Right.
The scary part, the real fear about new technology is asking it out loud. I have had business geniuses mm-hmm. that I talk to about this stuff, and they look at me and they go like, "You're very passionate." And I used to be very proud of that until I realized, oh no, they're actually saying, "I don't get it. I'm too dumb.
Right.
I'm a genius when it comes
to
business."
Nice.
Because they're afraid to ask, "I don't get this question." And they're afraid of sounding dumb. But how do you sound dumb in a new technology world? Like, imagine we're all being coerced into a thinking. So think about education and what education was meant to solve in the 1920s, pre or during the Industrial Revolution. It was, we need intelligent factory workers. So they gave them education, they gave them the basic schools, but they were moving them from class to classroom at 45-minute intervals. They were learning how to have work shifts. They were being subliminally trained
bells,
to work life by being given the candy of education. So the parents were, "I don't want to have my kid working in a factory. Let me have my kid under the ideology that they're getting smart so they don't have to deal with the factory. Little that they know is that they're teaching their kids to work at factories. And then these factory workers started getting older and being bedridden because of all this hard labor, that they're psychologically now being asked by their physicists, hey, do you have any kids at home helping you out with the labor? Oh, maybe you should tell your kid to start picking up the work. And now the parents are coming home tired, wearing down. Son, I think it's time for you to take on the family business, work at the factory at 16, 17. Those are most of our parents.
Right.
So how do you tell somebody that was forced to abandon traditional education, that were also subconsciously being prepared for factory work, to look at a world that factories are now being replaced by robots, that they're real value
West
was
Virginia right there.
There you go. It's education and access. A lot of people don't realize that real education begins in universities.
Yeah.
How do you get to universities? You need access. You need money. Most people working in the factories don't get to university. So before,
and at this point, universities are so inaccessible now because of the cost too.
And
so
that's like, where it gets
what's
scary.
What's the real cost of education? And that's where it becomes really complicated. And that's why it's also a lot very important. Again, those echo chambers where, you know, you really have to kind of learn to educate yourself in a lot
of
ways.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the conversations I have philosophically. It's that word now that I personally, they really don't want me to talk about this, but it's something I deeply am passionate about. It's that word now. Yeah. I truly believe that it's always been this way. From when society started being culturally created, when education started being built, when you look at people, congressmen, leaders who are deciding what education looks like, these conversations are not new. We've been banning books since the dawn of time. So
the reality is that
the algorithm, the echo chamber has always existed. If anything, it's gotten harder to hide the realities that we all function in echo chambers. And how do we navigate this new echo chamber in your pocket world? Right? It's building your own echo chamber. It's building your own business, right? It's something that me and Laura deal with. Like, my company's a team of seven. Uh-huh. And our company is being seen as a competitor by companies with thousands and thousands of people. I get literal, like, founder death threats by business leaders with 20, 30 years of business expertise. And of course, they don't see it as a death threat because they see it only as a financial threat, right? But what about people that are really building a company, their own bubble, as a means to have their safe space, right? That's the reason I started my company.
Right.
I'm a minority. I carry quite a bit of melanin. A lot of people say this. I have, you know, the business mindset. People compare me a lot, like, you know, flatteringly so, to Steve Jobs. But they say, oh, you got the Steve Jobs, you know, business, but you also got the Wozniak mind. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's a good thing, but it's also a threatening thing. I just mentioned business geniuses will have difficulty working with business geniuses. They're also technology tool geniuses. Right? It's specialists in the value of selling what you have, right? It's like being the value, your own PR, and your own manager. Most people that end up being like that either end up being so successful they get plucked out of history, or they don't even allow to get there, right? And that's why I call it a death threat. It's not like I'm going to kill you, Jose.
No, right,
it's more like, oh, Jose, what would these people think if they know that you're a seven-person team when I have 500, you know, X amount of people? And I'm like,
we don't need you. We're going to do it all ourselves.
Oh, yeah. We get those a lot. We have had literally companies that looked at us and say, oh, Jose, you're focusing on building smart labor. We're just going to hire 10 other people. And I'm like, are they fully aware that I just mentioned earlier, engineers don't exist? Mm-hmm. There's now companies that have their engineers so deep in their pockets that they're actually earning financial disruption. Like, I know people that have worked at, let's say, AMD or NVIDIA for just 10 to 15 years, and they have $20 million plus, like, our 401ks that they're retiring into massive levels of wealth to the point that they're like,
Why do I have to work?
I might as well work here. I'm having a great time. So the reason that they're doing that is because schools education sectors that were once like computer sciences. If you talk to a computer scientist from the 70s, they were actually being taught how to build chips, how to build actual computer architectures, how to actually build the devices that we're talking about that are scary. They were learning that. Now, when you go to a computer science degrees, it's, hey guys, we already made the computers. There's Microsoft, Oculus, there's Meta. Learn how to make tools with this.
It's kind of like architecture. Architecture, I remember my first year.
Oh my God. My mom was an architect. And I remember when I was little, like in her office, like the actual diorama.
I had the I was in that.
There are little trees that she would make.
Yeah, I had
like,
that end where it was like my first year. We were in Mylar. We were sketching in Mylar and drawing plans in Mylar. Yeah. The next year, AutoCAD. And thankfully, I knew AutoCAD because at the school I went to, they taught it. But some people were like.
There
you
go. And AutoCAD is a software company that makes great tools, but the engineers of AutoCAD were the ones that actually got their money's worth in education. They learn how to build software tools. They learn how to build the tools. So they're like, wait a minute, I don't want nobody to know this.
And to go with your thing, I remember because in the school, I went to Pratt Institute, and in Pratt, you get to pick your design course. And so there were some professors that were teaching, like, we're going to script and create a building. And to me, I was like, what is that? So I would always go to like a real architect, right? A real someone that, like, why do you
that
need
was actually
a script?
Teaching you exactly. How to build the dam, right. Whether instead of telling you, hey, these are the right, right. Tools for the dam.
Yeah. So then when COVID happened, like in 2021, towards that, I went back to Pratt. And what they were teaching them, I was like, they don't know how to draw. It was all very, like, they know how to make a fake
It's
thing.
A new skill.
They know how to do Maya.
It's a new school. It's a
right?
new skill. These
they know are... how to do Maya. They know how to do Rhino, whatever, you know. But, and to me, it's kind of like, okay, well, you could build it there. But it's an illusion too, right? Because you're not building it like the way it should be.
In the era before Industrial Revolution and post Industrial Revolution, when you look at the philosophical, the intelligent leaders, the IQ leaders, there was a very stark way to differentiate the groups. There were people that were the ones that said, oh, the way to be truly educated was to broaden your perspective. These were the travelers. These were the archaeologists. These were the historians, right? And then there was the financial access to education, right? These were the political leaders, the congressmen, the ones that had the financial means to get access to education that ended up hiring the ones that had the broader perspective of education, because the archaeologists, the historians had to go out there and get that information, right? So that's what's happening now. It's that if you want real education, it's to actually seek it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's to actually use... Yeah.
And verify that information, too.
Yeah, that's another one.
Sources, too, not just like TikTok and whatnot.
Right.
You know?
But they end up... But to grant it, they end up being great sources, too, right? There is a...
Yeah.
There is an internal joke that we talk about in my communities. We call it the YouTube to CEO pipeline.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, sorry. They call it the YouTube tutorial to CEO pipeline, which is people that followed YouTube tutorials... And they kept learning through YouTube tutorials. I know producers, successful music producers.
I will tell you, my partner, so he learned After Effects and all this stuff. But
there you go.
I could just go on whatever thing, get a template, and it looks like took forever to do it.
Yep, disassemble it, learning the stems. It is. And you know what's really funny is that, and hopefully there's at least a few developers or nerds in your audience that will laugh at this. But in my communities back in the day, being an engineer, we called those script kiddies. These were people that went online that wanted to be hackers, that wanted to be developers, and they just copied scripts that said how to make a computer shut down, and they downloaded it. They didn't understand what they were downloading. They just knew what it did. But guess what? They were looking at all that code and being like, oh, that's the code that makes it run. Uh-huh. another great analogy to this, and this one everybody's gonna get, at least the older crowd, MySpace. MySpace yes. taught people how to use HTML because they were like, how do I make my background da 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 da? And so they started copying the code. And I remember people that were like, oh, just delete all that because it's gonna have a link to another website. Just scrub that. That's the robot making ads. Yeah. And people were learning. And
right, we don't do that.
We don't do that anymore. Why did HTML get removed from the a sandbox? Because if you're allowed to have the ability to build whatever in that sandbox, somebody might create a whole different network subset outside of MySpace control within that echo chamber. That is not why you build a company. You build a bubble to control everything within that bubble. And that's what's happening now. It's engineers got plucked out of the story. It's all developers, like from music all the way up to creators, to engineers, to people that are architects, right? I'm sure you're noticing that all buildings look the same now, right? Because AutoCAD now has streamlined systems.
Yeah, exactly. You could just go and paste.
A city builder does not need an architect. A city builder can call AutoCAD and say, hey guys, I have, you know, five contracting companies. This, I'm sending you the map. Can you just send,
It happens in a lot of different levels.
I talk to them. Yeah. I literally have worked with senators and governors in our company, helping them procure headsets for civil design. And when you start looking at it, and I've seen them before, I have seen literally file formats called generic city template. And all they were looking to do is to show construction guys, this is what I want.
Yeah.
And then you, and obviously that's not for me to ask, but why? Because they don't want, it's against their best interests. It truly is.
Instead of where it could be used to actually design a really cool, like, actual, like, I just kept thinking about, you said, like, how dog parks aren't actually designed
I wanted to do a dog park. And I was talking to the city of Miami and Miami-Dade County. And I mean, the excuses that they were giving.
The questions and the reasons.
Yeah, you're like, it's for the good of the people.
Yeah,
and
it's healthier for people.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the good of the people is not what they want.
Exactly. You know, it's
the bubble. Yeah. It's you don't want another. You don't want a bubble created within your bubble.
And it's the same thing. Like then, you know, when I lived in New York, when I moved here, I started doing interactive installations.
Ooh.
And so a lot of stuff that I did was very like public perception. Like I did one about gun control. And which my boyfriend figured out, like the trigger stuff. But yeah, we've done a little bit of like your stuff.
We'll talk later.
Yeah, but it's just strange how people have their own agenda first than the public agenda. Yeah.
But your public agenda is your agenda. So
yes and no. Yeah. The way that I was, so if it was my agenda, I would be like, I would have money.
Yeah, I wouldn't be
philanthropic or as philanthropic as I am. I think like a lot of the stuff that you're born with, right? Mm-hmm. Or like how your parents raised you have a lot to do with how you are as an adult. And so my father was very into community first. And so when I went and I spoke, you know, it's different. New York is very communal. Mm-hmm. Miami is like,
I'm a New Yorker.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from upstate, so I get it.
Miami is like the most
ridiculous city. It's the magic city for a reason, right? And so when we were talking to them about public art, when we were talking to them about a dog park, it was so, I don't know. So I gave
up. This is where I stand on what you mentioned about philanthropy. You know, and this is something I think a lot about. I consider myself philanthropic, even though I'm very financial and success driven. I'm very ambitious. I'm very, to be quite frank, another word that people try to use or have attempted historically to use that people like us is selfish, right? I am incredibly selfish. It is something that I never shy away from, right? Uncle Scrooge from DuckTales, and anybody sees Disney cartoons, Uncle Scrooge had a literal vault full of gold coins, and the dude was swimming it. But his nephews, his community, his town, the people that asked, that dude was taking his nephews and, hey, you want to go see the mummies of Egypt, flying them around? That is philanthropy. You are supposed to acquire as much as you can to provide and uplift everything and all those around you. Yep. That is the most purest form of greed and selfishness there is.
Right.
It's just there's no word for putting everything, including yourself, as the driver for you to accomplish, for everybody to get. These are technically sacrifices. This is, we have words like being petty, right? Yeah. That get close to it, right? Nothing makes me more satisfied than proving somebody who doesn't believe in me wrong.
Right.
You're going to end up building this dog park in Miami because you're going to eventually...
Or in Fort Lauderdale, you're going to be like,
exactly.
Hey,
you're going to have the resources.
Awesome,
and eventually you're going to say, oh, wait a minute. The people that I spoke to are supposed to say no. They're supposed to not agree with what I want because I am trying to build a bubble. And bubbles inside somebody else's bubble is a threat. In a physical world, in a biological world, it's called a cancer or a tumor.
Right.
And families, it's called the black sheep. When it's you know what I mean?
Right.
There's you need the. We have now reached a point where the physical and digital world have just equaled themselves, and now everyone has access to their own bubble. You know, like I know people that have bomb shelters, doomsday shelters, yeah, that literally don't even go into a Walmart. You know what I mean? Like, they have never touched.
Yeah.
More power to them. They're very smart. They know computer scientists. I actually know somebody who designs headsets and doesn't interact with people, is tragically afraid of people.
But they, yeah.
They deserve to be treated as a human
and
or real.
Not only that, but they're okay with interacting with digital humans. VR chat is an amazing tool for people who have
full-blown
bad
relationships.
Social, like in-person social anxiety.
Or incapable, right?
Or
we're talking about incapable.
Yeah, because they're disabled.
Paraplegics, handicapped people. They're having full-on jobs.
It kind of reminds me of like dogs, even like, you know, like dogs of captivity.
Yes, service animals are huge, yep.
And so imagine this AI nursing this dog
in the way that it wants to be nursed, slowly knowing what it's harming them, like real-time deterrence, looking at your heart rate, dog tags. This is something that I don't like talking about because the word dog tag also applies to military, and I'm kind of talking about military right now, but this is something that actually was introduced by conversations talking about dangerous pets. They are using dog tags as a way to GPS track dangerous breeds of animals. And this is actually in video gamers and people who play games might actually know this. There's a video game called Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
There is a conflict, a war, and they introduced this scenario where military dog tags actually also carry a NFC tag that allows you to biometrically lock your gun. So that means only legal licensed soldiers can shoot those weapons, which sounds theoretically great, but who is the one that controls those NFC chips? What happens if the people that are selling the guns just say, I want to make this side be the victor, and they press the button and then the other side can't shoot their guns?
Oh, shoot.
Right? And so that is the situations that they introduce. Technology people are thinking about everything that's coming, and smart people are already solving these answers. People have been thinking about these echo chamber realities before the internet was even born. We are capable of knowing that the stove is hot, so we're not touching the stove again. I think we get sometimes so caught up in the touching of the stove and how much it's going to burn that we never stop to think like, yo, like, we'll likely never touch that stove again.
No, and I think the more you talk about it, the easier it gets, because like when we first started talking about it years ago, I was like, oh my God. Yeah. But the more I've talked about it, I'm like, the less scary it gets, you know? Yeah.
You're always going to be manipulated. The financial world's about to be disrupted. We are in a world where there are no engineers. There is a world where everybody's being coerced into a thinking. There is no allowance to build your bubble within other bubbles. So with all of those full-on understanding, if your goal is to really survive, it's to really satisfy that.
The drive.
Yeah, that drive, it is what it is, right? So that's who I am. That's what wires me. That's what wires you, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what attracted us.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that I find very difficult, I'm going to bring it back to the dogs, right?
Yes, please. Yeah.
So dogs, a lot of people, when they're looking to get a dog, right, they're like, oh, what breed fits my lifestyle or whatever. And a lot of times they
aren't ready.
Well, they're not ready, but also they don't understand the dog's needs, right? And the dog has a drive, right? As we are saying, we have a drive, right? And sometimes even yourself, you don't understand what the drive is. You're like, oh crap. Like,
and we have to listen to people.
I'm willing to.
Yeah. That is so true. You know, what's really funny. Oh man, you just ripped a memory up. And I don't remember the specific animal, but Richard Dawkins had a lot of incorrect things about animal behavior that is now starting to be figured out now. Right. And it's very scary because you said yourself, it's, do we actually know what an animal needs,
right?
Or are we trusting books and text information of people that were visualizing animals? One thing I learned very recently, it's through learning about virtual reality, through learning about technologies like spatial, there are animals out there that have cognitive capabilities that we ourselves don't understand yet. Mm-hmm. Have you ever looked at a cat looking at a camera? Unlike a dog,
the frequency, when you're taking a picture, sometimes
they know.
Yeah, they're doing a cute thing. You take out your phone, they stop. Frequency
there is a language there that humans talk that we are now starting
The cats develop the meowing because they noticed that it was the same thing with children. There's a lot of things that develop over time.
Evolution is not just physiological. It requires a lot of cognitive decisions being done.
Dude,
it's the touching of the stove that leads to evolution to evolve.
Evolution is as simple as literal kids are kind of born with just knowing how to use an iPad.
Immediately.
Give them the iPad.
The thumbprint. The thumbprint is disappearing. The index finger thumbprint is the pointing finger, and the index and the thumbprint are disappearing, because we don't have uses for them. We're not grasping anymore. We don't live in the world.
Some people don't.
No.
Some people don't.
Why should they? Like, why should you be lifting things that you don't want to unless you want to lift things, right?
Right.
And that's the reality, is evolution is happening so fast now in a world now that we're learning. It's like, oh man, the technology world, the physical world they were always there. It's just we're learning to now interface with it. And the scary part is that the people now, as we're learning to interface with it, we're finding entities or governments or leaders that already were there. You know, they were already there. They already knew this. They were working on it for years.
What I'm thinking of too is like, maybe you could also use AI to kind of match like your lifestyle with like a type of
happening.
And I'm sure it is
that's called dating apps, that's called algorithms. That's called bars. You don't go to a bar that you don't like the music for,
I mean specifically with animals, because I think it's like, that's the reason I don't have an animal right now. I just literally don't have the time,
and we have the lifestyle that doesn't support
we don't have the time. I don't have, honestly, like I travel way too much. Like I would like, you know, to take it on walks. Like I barely like go on enough walks myself, you know what I mean? So, but I think like having, you know, some sort of a companion
it's
is
very
fun.
Incredible.
No, and one thing that like, I it's not talked about enough. When I was younger, like probably like 11, 12, I had to go to the hospital a few times for, you know, some testing and different things. And one thing that kind of helped me a lot was they had, it was at Miami Children's Hospital, and they had pet therapy. So there was like two golden retrievers that would come at certain parts of the day, and that was like the best thing ever. So like, I don't know, I think pets are just so awesome. And I think like, I'm really excited to get to the point where like I can have a dog and a cat again, but just not yet.
And also what that world will look like when you're ready for it, right? Yeah. Because I truly believe that companies that are trying, right? They have been burned by public perception and historical mistakes, right? One that comes is to mind is Petco, right? Like the historical, like animal issues with the food and all that stuff. These are companies that at some levels do have people that care about animals that are going to be looking at these tools.
I have conversations about Purina can't be that bad.
Exactly.
Right? Like there's people in the company
that care about
that
it.
Really.
But they have investors and so there's going to be a forced handshake. And that's where these tools are going to be. It's important that we all have engineers in those spaces, because the last thing you want is Purina to have that AI system that they adopt. But then all of a sudden they swipe and own all the engineers that make that app. And then they start saying, hey, don't tell and that's what was kind of lead to is that there's going to be maybe assessment tests. All right. PETA jobs and agencies do this already. They try to make sure you have the space, the living arrangement, all that. That's a little bit invasive when you think about it, because there are people.
Well, I actually interviewed someone in that space.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could see it from their point
of view. Of course,
no, 100%.
It's important.
They need
it's
to make
needed.
Sure that,
yeah.
that you are actually responsible.
Although invasive, it is required.
Yeah. Right.
Because there's more bad people that are willing to
Correct.
Do damage to animals than good.
Yeah. Or that it will just have it and then have to return it eventually because they can't afford
and
it.
That's
or
where,
if they're actually don't have a place to live or they're renting and they couldn't own a pet or what, all those stuff.
And that's where conversations about coercion come in. The question comes in
right,
now
when I
to the person
you, yeah.
when the person that you asked to about her goals about being part in that space. Now the real question is, if a tool exists that gives you the capability of getting a yes or no answer, and you actually knowing that data is doing everything that you used to do at an invasive level, granted, although needed, are you willing to trust that data? And that's where it gets scary, because now that person that more than likely trusts themselves as the beacon of making that decision is going to now face the reality that decision is taken away from them. And for me, in my opinion, I think that's a much better world, because that's a world that you get to have your cake and eat it too. It gives you the ability to find more people that are capable of owning pets, giving the lifestyle without being invasive. That's what these tools are meant to do, to be an enhancement tool for people like those that are tackling this, not necessarily replace, but make their jobs easier. That they don't have to defend. They don't have to get on a conversation about defending the invasion of privacy and still saying, hey, I don't know what's being asked or done. I just know that it's accurate.
Right.
That's already being done. It's at really high levels that you can get like pre-screening for cancer now within seconds.
Right.
It's not a doctor looking at it.
Right.
It's a machine that has a lot of data, a lot of experience, machine technology. And then that's given to a quality assurance doctor that instead of spending 20 hours looking through the data, he just spends 2 minutes looking at the picture. Oh, yep, that's cancer. Go. Yep, that's cancer. Go. Yep, that's cancer. They literally have x-ray farms now overseas. That's how you get an immediate result. They have doctors, and that's where it gets scary. It's okay.
Because it hasn't been scary.
It's scary because those are not answered yet.
Correct.
And now the engineers need to tackle that specifically. It's the devaluation of intelligence. Those doctors, in real time, are seeing the investments of their degrees just slowly being replaced by an algorithm. We just saw, like, we were talking about paralegals just got replaced by ChatGPT 4.5, you know what I mean?
Right, but at the same time, I mean, it gets hard, right? For example, I had that conversation with this woman who runs a rescue. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to her about, like, how come we can't make legislation? You know what the reason was? Because they have so many cases that they can't.
They need these tools.
And in that sense, I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, get the tool in there and let's go so we can do this.
Something that
exactly.
I talk about.
And that's exactly it. And that's what people don't think about AI. And yes, AI can be really scary in a lot of ways. And yes, it's going to take a lot of jobs, and that's
but it's
a kind of a
have
whole
so much
exactly, and that's a whole kind of separate conversation and the economic side of it and the political side, and that we're not going to get into. But it's going to help in a lot of ways, help push society forward, and that's exactly what
you're
saying.
What we need today is something it's a position that I imagine or brainstorm in my mind a lot. I call it empathy-driven innovation infrastructure. It is something that Laura is living proof of. Laura learned about spatial computing, about XR, the AI, and the implications of all those technologies and biometric data, all of those technologies dancing around each other from a world that dealt with giving the best customer assurance and service to people that are doing the same thing at a very large level for companies, for business, right? She mentioned she's talking to the owners of these apartments, right?
Yeah. Most
of
the owners. I was dealing with millionaires and billionaires in kind of that space, and now I'm dealing with millionaires and billionaires in the tech space.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, kind of what I was saying earlier, it's really good to know kind of the human side and also know kind of like, okay, I don't know the details of the technical side like Jose knows, but I know the general aspect and I know how to explain it.
And
to
that's needed.
In general terms.
It's generally, and through our career, we would imagine it made me realize how empathy driven innovation infrastructure must exist in government branches, because the realities are we live in a world of oversight. We don't live in a world of active innovation. Uh-huh. When you look at how governments, and I'm talking specifically for United States, though in the United States, we have oversight committees, which are literally groups of people that are designed to say no, not let's watch
just go,
and learn.
Yeah. Just go to your community. Like if they're building a new park, you go and they're like, no.
Yeah.
And again, that's the name. The name says it all. It's oversight committee. Because they oversee, but they didn't actually do the work.
They're not in it.
So they don't get it.
And that's the, it's, and
that's
the
what,
word.
I hate that.
But that's the problem. Oversight. It's exactly what it's meant to do. It's seeing over what's happening in the ground. That in a world where disruption or innovation happened in, let's say, impactful large centers of communication, right? Like think about when electricity got invented, there was literally an event for that. There are events always for innovation breakthrough. That's where patents came from, right? There were patent offices. So we now live in a world where innovation is happening in basements, in offices, in a park,
Google was started in a garage. Like people say that kind of stuff all the time, and it's true.
And so now we live in a world where oversight is actually a really bad thing. We need real-time understanding. We need the oversight committees to have a sub-team that is literally paid
on
government researchers that are literally like they're literally sharing and that's the future of work. I truly believe that's the future of work. I see high level information labs, and this is already happening. It's just it was never done officially, right? Of course, every single giant tech company has CIA conversations.
Right.
The moment that your company deals with 250,000 emails or more from around the world and you're moving money, you'll get a knock on your door and say, hey, it's the CIA. We want to know what you're doing. We want to know you're paying your taxes.
Yeah.
We want to know. They have to, right? So that world, those occurrences are not happening overnight everywhere. I think that eventually those conversations will change, where now it's probably going to be likely these agencies working with universities or places of education, and they're going to say, oh, I see that you're building an audience, you're tackling this, we are representatives of the government, we want to offer financial subsidies to get researchers into that conversation, that yes, you're sharing information. Just an explosion of new jobs. Now architects will become technology-driven quality assurance architects, so they're the ones that are know how to build architecture, but they're looking and quality assuring for the innovation within a world.
Yeah, and they're the ones that are talking to the clients and are doing the adjustments. Right. They're the ones that are providing the customer service. I've said it all the time and in other podcasts and stuff. You could have the best product, the best food, the best building, the best company, but if you don't have really good customer service, what's the point?
Exactly.
Nobody likes talking to a chatbot. Nobody likes waiting on the phone for hours.
And you know it. Like you're like,
People get annoyed.
Like the easy one is AT&T and Comcast.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
My partner is like, because we don't have the fiber optics yet. My partner is like, Oscar's like, you need to get on Comcast. The internet will be better. And I'm like, I do not care. I will not deal with them.
You know, and you know what's really cool about those systems? I'll have you solve the answer yourself. So what happens if I tell you, hey, I have a script here. Uh-huh. This is my Comcast script. And if I give you access to the Comcast script, so if you have the script that they tell you, hey, this is the template of all of the answers they get asked for you to sign up for Comcast. These are all the scripted questions for you to lower your bill. These are all scripts. If you get access to that, wouldn't you be able to build a script for the answers and never having to even call them? There's going to be a world. Google actually introduced, and they haven't released it publicly yet, but now they have AI assistants. So you won't be calling Comcast. You're absolutely correct. You're going to tell your assistant that knows that pre-selected script from Comcast and say, hey, I want internet at $50 a month. And if they don't have any bills, plans for that, say bye. Yeah. And you know what's really crazy about AI systems? They don't fuck around.
Yeah.
If the AI system knows that you're not budging for under $50, it's not good. Guess what? And you know what's really crazy? That Comcast's interest is to make money at all costs. So they prepare the AI to do whatever it takes to make the deal. So if you're locked in at 50, you know what's going to happen? I think this is a plan.
I think you can tell your AI to tell them that if you don't do it at $50, that you're going to move to AT&T.
That's master negotiating. And so the AI system.
Oh, no. What I'm saying is I just will not go to Comcast just because my father had it. And to call them was like.
It's a nightmare.
No.
It's like, I just want the operator.
Yeah.
It's
and then
like
they don't have
any
them anymore.
Other place but the operator. Yep. You're like, I just want
the operator is only going to be accessed by owners of companies that are paying bills of $250,000.
That's really cool because
this is where it gets really exciting, and this is where I tell people, right? How much is that job that if you're that provides human quality assurance?
How much is that?
That's going to be beyond lucrative because there's going to be AI systems now. They're going to do everything for you. And you're going to have AI systems that are never going, you will never talk to Comcast. Your AI will. You'll literally get a text message from your assistant and say, hey, I called Comcast and guess what? I negotiated your bill for $30.
I want my customer service.
You will. You just will have to use all these tools to get very successful.
Facebook does it already.
Facebook has an internal AI assistant with their employees.
Like if you want to talk to someone in Facebook, is like, you're funny.
Yeah.
First, you got to pay the $4.99 for the Meta.
For the subscription.
Yeah, the thing.
That's how they're pricing their customer service now.
Yeah. And then you still have to go through.
No, but I do like the idea of an AI to talk to another AI.
Humans are expensive and nobody. We live in a world where, unfortunately, slavery existed. We're not talking about physiological only, we're talking about developers.
We could say that, I mean, slavery is still going on.
There you go. That's what I meant.
Exactly.
That's the point. You get it. We live in a world where we are shackled by information. We're shackled by access. And the only way to truly free oneself is to build your own echo chamber above all costs. There is no real living anymore if you don't have something of your own. Like a lot of people, that's the real scary, isn't the technology. The real scary isn't the tools.
It's the amount of people that don't have that.
Or the amount of people that genuinely want to use these tools to manipulate, to control, to disrupt. The real fear is as old as time. It's ourselves. It's not the technology, it's not the tools, it's how we use those tools that are the
but
threat.
But I think like knowing that is the
yes.
big thing of it.
We're gods. You know? We are reaching a point, and that's yeah. such a very terrifying thing that we, you know, a lot of people, when you say that, a lot of people think that you're saying that, oh, you're bigger than, you know, that yeah, your holy yeah, belief yeah, yeah, or anything. Yeah. No, you can still be a god
yeah.
and believe in God. Aren't angels subsets of gods, right? So what I'm trying to get at is we all have the capability of building, truly building for ourselves, right? When you, the problem is that we got used to accessibility.
Well, when, but when you say
all.
We, that's a...
We as in ourselves. And that's, I mean, that's the interesting part.
Well,
the collective we.
For example, you guys are building, I'm building something, but the amount of people that are not, and I agree with you, the amount of people that are not building for their own, like I feel like, If you take their jobs away, I mean, like, what are they going to do?
The reality is, and this is where it gets heartbreaking, and it's something I talked to Laura about, not all dinosaurs died. Uh-huh. Only the ones that fell into the pits of hot oils, and the ones that got burned, the ones that couldn't feed themselves died. And the ones that figured out how to avoid those things kept going, they kept evolving, they kept growing. The ones that figured out which were threats and started avoiding those threats survived. What's happening is we must evolve, we must grow, and we must fully understand that there will be dinosaurs that are going to fall into the hot oils, that they will get burned, that they are going to get hit by the meteor, and we will have to feed, we'll have to grow, and we'll have to evolve. We can be selfish and greedy to coerce those that we genuinely care about above all to get them to a place of start building. But the only way that you do that is by truly understanding those that you're trying to inspire, which means that even with that approach, there will be people that will still fall through the cracks, that will just decide, I don't want this. I want to stay in the matrix, right? That's just the way it is. Some people are comfortable with that, and it should be respected because that's their bubble and that's their echo chamber, and that's the point of all of this. It's you invite them in. Hey, you don't want it? This is mine and I love it. I'm not going to yours. Human expectancy or a lifespan does have a limit, but nobody's actually fully aware of the actual limit yet. We are slow because of technology and quality assurance. Human life is extending, and age or physical, biological effects of aging are a problem, which means your organs are deteriorating, your cells are deteriorating because your cells are losing levels of oxygen.
Right. Oh,
and so you need to ask yourself is, oh man, wait a minute, there's probably going to be, what if we find out that a baby isn't supposed to be exposed to oxygen or room temperature air until they're age 4? And that's the reason why humans are not living to 320 years old. There's so much that we don't know.
Yeah. Well, there's a dog. I don't know if you guys know about the dog. He's 31.
Yes.
He lives in Portugal.
Yes, yes, yes.
Has the life. Yeah. I mean, you know, like is free to roam, eats, you know,
whatever
raw.
That's yeah. It.
And the reason why it's living so long, to me, is because of the stress. There's
yes,
no stress.
There's no stress.
You have no stress.
There you go.
You know, like,
no
how
stress,
do you think?
Completely natural
that's where it gets conspiracy. Yeah. You know, I love philosophy.
Same thing like
philosophy.
You said with the island, you know. And funny enough, we were just talking. My grandmother is going to be 104 in December.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a wild age, right? I think about that a lot.
That's the lady that skydived to 104 and then died a little.
I mean, that's a great way to go. That's the way to go. She knew. She knew she was going out, and she lied to everybody saying, oh, I got to go skydiving. She knew she was leaving.
All the crazy things she's experienced in 104 years, right? But at the same time, it's in 104 years, that's a long time to be alive. She literally at this point is so ready to go.
Right.
She is honestly in pain, you know, and it also gets to the point where it's like,
but that's the
I hope that by the time that, you know, we're in our lifetime, there is a choice that you can go when you want to go. Because
and I think
I don't want to be it.
Likely. More than likely.
And
you know what's going to get scary. And that's the problem with what the questions that you're raising, which I fully agree we should be allowed to. Right. But the problem is what happens when we learn about how to have actually accurate human life expectancy and extension, right? So what happens when we find out, as we mentioned, like a baby isn't supposed to be dealing with that kind of oxygen until age 4. And if you do that, you know, the skin gets tough enough that they last to for a very long time. And a parent decides, no, I want my child to die at 60. And you are now aware that you're going to die at 60 when you are now interacting in a world where everybody's going to live to 320 years old. And the right and the decision got taken
right,
away
exactly,
from you.
Exactly. Yeah.
The
reality, it's kind of like, yeah. Sorry, but my partner was telling me the other day, he was like, you know what's funny? You didn't get to name yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't get to choose to be alive.
Exactly.
I didn't get to choose. Yeah. Love. That's part of the reason I don't want kids. I have a laundry list of reasons.
Right. Yeah. I have a laundry list too.
But that's part of the reasons. Yeah. That, like, it's like that's.
I'm a personal believer that we do have a choice.
That we decided
to be here.
It's weird. I've done a lot of different research on like those types of questions. And
oh, I love this. If you want to go there, let's go there.
No, there was one person, I forgot who it was, but they said that before you're born, you got to choose your parents. Yep. And I was like, that's like for my father, I'm like, but for my mom, I'm like, I would have not chosen.
I don't think you get to choose the parents. I get you get to choose the outcome that you want. And the problem about outcome, it's like playing a video game.
Right.
You get Mario, and on the box of the cover of Super Mario, it says, hey, your job is to save the princess in the Mushroom Kingdom. And there's 20 stages, and they're all different with the multiple worlds. They're not going to tell you that after world 3, it's going to get really hard.
Yeah.
And there's
or
ways
that there's
to,
loop.
Or there's loops, and you can actually skip to the...
Yeah.
No, they don't tell you that. So I truly believe, based on the research, if you really want to go there, I am a believer in simulation theory. We are now at a point where we are seeing fibers of proof of simulation theory come through. And
is that the Matrix?
Yeah. Okay. But the problem with the Matrix is that the Matrix, when you look at the theory, the actual movie, the Matrix, they kind of...
They
skip through it. But the Matrix is a cognitive physiological world that gets hacked by aliens. So
simulation theory
is that there is a algorithm that exists by self-awareness.
Okay.
So how do you continuously grow self-awareness by individualized self-awareness? It's a CPU on on your computer, uh-huh. on your laptop. There's something called a general processor, mm-hmm. general computing, right? So general computing means it's a sandbox for you to, I guess, build and create and think within those parameters and capabilities, mm-hmm. right? So they have zeros and ones. So there's ways for thinking to be made, right? So that's what simulation theory is.
It's okay.
Each person is having multiple experiences that collectively create a huge bubble of self-awareness that is continuously living through multiple experiences happening. And how do you continuously have it to grow? By continuously experiencing itself. It is as poetic as an ecosystem, as nature. Is there a beginning or an end, or is there just an it? And you're just one instance of a continuous circle of experiences. So when you die, you literally are back into the player select screen and you're like, hey, ta-da! Like, did you have fun? Did you like everything you had? Cool, listen.
Do you
there's
believe
nothing
that?
More.
Yes and no. I don't think I chose to be here.
I would also agree. I could do without this. To be honest.
maybe that was your choice. Maybe you went into the game knowing that you don't want to be in the game to the point that you are subconsciously locked into that.
Knowing that you're ready to get out.
But here's the penalty. And this is where we're talking about proofs that support this. Most people that die or they're dying or have a near-death experience, they get a movie played for them. You get a literal supercut of all your best, worst, and most important moments of your life. It's a freaking
it's a movie.
Yeah, like a
but that's a beautiful. It's such a poetic movie that only it's yours. And some people that do survive end up realizing that that movie wasn't enough, and they shift to something else. They end up for more. They end up sometimes even getting sick of being alive. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that purpose is, I truly believe, the sign that we are in a simulation, that we did actually design, we decide to be here. The question is it a decision that we had no other choice to decide against?
What if there's
nothing else? This is what I truly believe. I truly believe that the most valuable thing that I, especially now more than ever, what I value the most above love, believe it or not, is my own mind. It's right. my own thought, because that's what allows me to channel my love. Uh-huh. Like, you can't love without rationalizing why you love someone.
Right.
So I'm deep in my thoughts a lot. I mean, I love being inside my own mind.
Right.
And what happens if that's all you get? Like, that sounds cool. I love being there, but I don't want to just be there.
Right.
I like the idea.
Well, that is all you get. You live and die on your own.
No, just like you live and die right, by enhancing that thinking.
Yeah, by the experiences that you have.
No, of course.
You're going to have different characters in your last life. You might theoretically forget the things that you love right now, but those feelings morph you. You clearly, and that's what I truly believe in, those underlying instincts of being like, I don't like being here. I don't decide to be here. I truly think that that's a lesson that you already made prior. And I truly think it's the making peace with that is likely the goal that you have. It's like,
but the reason
that drives me to thinking this is, if I'm a computer guy and I'm a developer, I think a lot about empty pixels.
Yeah.
If you're a zero or a one of data without value,
yeah.
Like, what is there? It's just nothing. There's void, there's darkness. Right. So what happens if you're just floating in space in darkness,
knowing that
there's a party happening on Earth in this other side, and they tell you, hey,
but that's trauma.
For this experience to come,
it's trauma.
It is trauma. But what if understanding your nature, what it's all about? What if you learn to say, hey, I have the ability, like, if whatever's talking to you tells you, hey, I have the ability to pluck you back in there. But in reality, you have the right to pluck yourself in there. I am just a collective voice. By the way, there's really nothing. This is something that we built collectively. It's our little sandbox. You get to pop in and out. There really isn't anything else. I'm trying to figure out collectively what this is all about. And all of you guys individually are helping me. I don't have a choice. I don't know where I come from. I don't know who created me. I'm just here. And this is literally our CPU, and you're nothing but a zero or one. So you can stay here with me and hang out and talk about, I don't know, whatever forever, or go have fun. And yes, the
but
self-awareness.
It's not fun.
Yeah,
fun.
Exactly.
It's a shitty world.
It depends on like, if you're like Elon Musk, yeah, it's fucking awesome. You know, but like, if you're someone in Africa.
There wouldn't be glioblastoma. There wouldn't be suffering. There wouldn't be starvation.
There wouldn't be billionaires who could literally end world hunger.
But there will be more.
And if you let me answer, I can tell you why there'll be more. My father died in 2020. He died with nothing in his bank account. He died with a very full of love life. Mm-hmm. He died locked in his ways, dumb ideologies, didn't really know what it meant to have something of his own. And yet he went out smiling. Oh, like, I think a lot about, if I lived his life, I would be full of regret. In fact, that was the moment I decided that I don't want a life full of regret, because I knew about simulation theory since I was 14 years old. I knew that I was being played from the moment that I got my first laptop that taught me English, that made me excel in first grade. Like, you eventually start looking at things for more than what they are, and you start realizing you're being taught to be valuable to other people, not to your family.
Right.
So those experiences are who I am.
Right.
They're hell in the grand scheme of things. They're horrific. Nobody should go through that. but I am having conversations with people like yourself, people who are going to listen to this podcast and be like, crap, I was being depressed thinking about there might not be nothing there. And maybe, right. And there's people who do feel like they didn't have a choice. Uh-huh. And they start entertaining the fact that maybe it's the only choice that they had, right? And not a choice that they didn't want to make, but the only choice that there is to make. And that's a lot easier to deal with. It's a lot easier to build.
But if that's only have a choice you have, that's still not a choice.
That's what, but now you find, but now that gets very beautiful. Maybe that's our job to figure out where we came from. Maybe collectively we will accidentally trigger another bubble that led to what created our simulation, right? Maybe that's what we all are. Maybe we're nothing but reliving humanity's story, and one of us is going to figure it out. It might be you. You might go home one day and be like, I just figured out time travel, and all of a sudden everything makes sense, and then the world just ends because guess what? You figured it out. You get the movie script. You get the thank you. You get the credits of the movie. You get thank you to our sponsors. I truly think that there's always interest. We are designed with interest. So if we're not aware of our underlying interests and we only have these weird personal values that we hold on to, like you said, you want to work with animals above all costs.
Right.
But
here's
there.
The thing. No, yeah. I was doing interactive installations, and I made, when Parkland had the shooting, I had that installation, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't mean it to happen. At the same time, seeing people interact with that piece, and some people, like, it just went through their minds. Yeah. I was like, and then at the same time, I had my dog, and just doing simple, like, practices of, like, with food and with stuff, the amount of love that I got from my dog showing me appreciation for doing that for him.
They're putting in the effort to communicate with
exactly. you. Exactly. Showed me how much of a...
Yeah.
How much this does not mean anything, but this relationship means so much.
Mm-hmm. It's the effort that you put into. Yeah. It's truly, that's what I truly believe. It's the decision that we... of being here or not... It's so meaningless. It's important to ask, right? Because we have to have people tackling it. But I truly believe it's the efforts that you put in that value the most. I truly think that we all have a little voice in our head that tells us, you want to do this. You care about this.
And not to get super morbid. I mean, this is kind of like a really like fucked up way to say it. But like, if you're not going to kill yourself, like, what's the point? Like, you have to enjoy it, right?
Get to a position to ask yourself, not make peace with it, but ask yourself, is it an underlying thought? Is it a drive? Is there a manipulation at a young age that made you feel that way? Mm-hmm. And if you are able to have those conversations of manipulation can be broken if you are aware that you're being manipulated. So I truly, that's all of these things support simulation theory. Simulation theory doesn't necessarily have to be something you decided. It could be something that was decided for you. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, it could just be a result of planets exploding.
No, that's why I say like yes and no. I believe in simulation theory, but I really think it was decided for us. I don't think it was something that decided.
I like the idea too. I like the idea of somebody that went like, yo, I figured out how to build a really awesome ant farm, and I created an ant farm and I left it alone.
Yeah.
Now, what y'all do within that ant farm, that's on y'all. Right. So is it a bad thing that somebody created an ability for us to experience things, even if we didn't have a choice? No, it's kind of cool. It was never done. It was never done with intention to hurt, to harm, to destroy.
How do you know?
It just is.
I honestly,
because
one of
I
my
am
theories,
ambitious
one of my
and
theories,
I am greedy
yeah.
and I don't know. I was raised with fearing those words. I grew up with being scared of telling people, I'm smarter than that person talking on the stage. I know more than that. I remember having those thoughts and then watching cartoons that were telling you, hey, you know, telling people these things are bad or you're selfish. And I'm like, why? Wait a minute. So I'm supposed to blindly support institutions that are designed to protect you, but I can't decide to protect myself and others? Like,
yeah, well, it's something like, you know, the kibble. You know, you buy kibble. Everyone buys kibble. Yeah. They even tell you when you adopt your dog, here's a free bag of kibble.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Candy with the medicine works in both ways, for good and for bad.
You know,
we've been... Dude, oh, man, like, it's... once again, it's not the victor that writes history. It's the best PR team.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to know more about our guests, read the show notes down below. Please hit the subscribe button if you liked us, and it would be even better if you would leave us a review. See you next Wednesday.